Well, hello and welcome back to another of our installment in John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. We left off as Hopeful and Christian were dealing with Ignorance, who was placing his hope for salvation, the ground of his salvation, not in the alien righteousness of Christ, but in the righteousness that Christ was working in him so as to confuse justification with sanctification. And what Bunyan is doing as Hopeful and Christian get nearer and nearer to the celestial city, having gone from the Delectable Mountains into the Enchanted Ground, coming up on the land of Beulah, is he's showing you that perseverance is needed right up until the end of the Christian walk. He's given Hopeful's testimony of true and saving faith, true, the true understanding of the doctrine of justification. Then he shows you Ignorance's ignorant understanding of it. And then, after his sort of showing the true and false doctrines of justification, whereby somebody might get this far along on their journey and still be a hypocrite, still be a heretic, still be one bound for hell, he takes one other discussion of apostasy, one other discussion of turning away from the faith. You can get so close to heaven, walk right up to the gates, and then decide to renounce Christ, the Christ that you've served or pretended to serve all your life. And so they're still talking, and as they're talking, Christian remembers somebody he knew a while back, a man named Temporary. And he says, "Did you remember him?" And Hopeful says, "Yes, he dwelt in the town of Graceless, near 2 miles near Honesty, and he dwelt next door to one Turnback." And so Temporary and Turnback, these are names for apostates, people who make a show of Christianity and then leave off. And he says, "Yeah, he would come to me often with many tears, and I pitied him, and I thought that he'd not be without hope. I thought that maybe he might be a genuine Christian, but one may see it is not everyone that cries, 'Lord, Lord,'" a quote from Matthew 7, verse 21. "Not everybody who is sensible of their sin and makes cries out to the Lord is genuinely saved." Well, they start talking about the reasons for backsliding, the reasons for apostasy. Why do people who look like they're Christians suddenly start to slough off and backslide and eventually apostatize? Hopeful gives four reasons for it that I think are enlightening for us. First, he says, "Being hot for heaven by virtue only of the sense of and fear of the torments of hell, as their sense of hell and the fears of damnation chills and cools, so their desires for heaven and salvation cool also." So in other words, the reason that people, certain people, want to go to heaven and be a Christian is because they don't want to go to hell. Let me tell you something. You don't need to be born again to not want to go to hell. You don't need to have a new heart to want to escape punishment. You just have to be sensible of the punishment. And anybody can intellectualize that given that there is justice in the world, given that there's justice between men and women, given that we have a sense of justice when somebody does something wrong, we think that man ought to be punished. Certainly that's going to be the case on a cosmic level, that God is just and that he will punish all sinners. And then you realize, oh my goodness, I've sinned, and therefore I'm liable to God's justice. I don't want to go to hell. So yes, I'll believe in Jesus. That's not true in saving faith. And what happens is when you come to Christ for fear of hell, when you stop fearing hell for whatever reason, you stop walking with Christ. Another reason is they have slavish fears that do overmaster them. I speak now of the fears they have of men. But when that, so they think I ought to be a Christian, because if I'm not a Christian, then people are going to think that I'm wicked. You know, maybe that doesn't fit so much in our day, in our sort of pluralistic society. Certainly in Bunyan's day, I'll be a Christian because if I'm not, people are going to call me a heathen. You know, they're going to call me an unrighteous person. Yet when that terror is a little over, they betake themselves to second thoughts. You know, maybe I ought not to fear man so much, and then forget about this Christianity. Three, the shame that attends religion is also a stumbling block in their way. They're proud and haughty, and religion is viewed by some as contemptible, and so when they've lost their sense of hell and wrath to come, they go back to a less shameful way of life. You know, if you are belittled for your faith in Christ, and you decide, well, you know, this hell thing, I'm not too sure, then you say, well, why should I bear the reproach of Christ if I'm not even really sure I believe it? And then backsliding and eventual apostasy. And then number four, guilt and to mediate terror, or to meditate terror are grievous to them. They are not like to see their misery. We've talked about this in the last couple of videos, that people don't realize that the sting of their conscience isn't merely bad news, that it is bad news and it should make them feel, you know, oh my goodness, I'm a wretch. But it's not meant to leave you there. And people think, oh, if I keep thinking this way about myself, I'm going to have low self-esteem. I'm going to start thinking of myself, you know, poorly. It's designed to make you think poorly of yourself so you think much of Christ. It's designed to humble you so that you might be exalted by God and not by your own conceits. And so these are the four reasons that people turn back. And Hopeful says, I've shown you the reasons. Can you show me the manner? All right, here's why. Can you show me how it happens? And Christian says, sure. And he gives nine steps that I just think are very instructive for us as we aim to press on in the fight of faith, even to the very end of our journey. One, they draw off their thoughts, all that they may, from the remembrance of God, death, and the judgment to come. It starts in the mind. The battle is won and lost in the mind. In the first part of apostasy, the first part of denying Christ, though you would have professed faith in him, is to just leave off the discipline of the mind in meditating on things of God. The reality of God, the reality of judgment, the reality of death. Stop thinking about those things. Two, then they cast off by degrees private duties, as closet prayer, secret prayer, praying by yourself, curbing their lusts, watching, watchfulness, keeping an eye on your soul, sorrow for sin and the like. So first they stop thinking about it, then they stop watching their heart. They stop praying. Who's got time for that now? Every time I pray, I just start, my mind's wandering, so might as well not even do it. And then little things pang their conscience and they go, you know, whatever, I can handle that. I've got Christian liberty. They feel sin and they don't want to go through the rigmarole of mourning over it. Oh, I know I could take my feelings to the cleaners and really, you know, mourn over my sin, but that's just so emotionally draining. I'm a sinner. I'm going to sin. I'm going to sin tomorrow. If I do this every day, I'm going to drive myself crazy. It's worldly. Three, then they shun the company of lively and warm Christians. And note here, not they shun the company of Christians. All people heap up Christians for themselves, but they shun the company of lively and warm Christians. Oh, those Christians, you know, that guy, he's just prideful. That guy is always talking about reading and praying, and he who says it's wrong to not do that. That guy who says, you know, it's wrong to skip church for this or that, that's just legalism. He's just, you know, really strict in his conscience. He's over scrupulous. I don't want to be around him. He makes me feel bad about myself. He thinks he's a better Christian than me. Four, after that, they grow cold to public duty. So they've already grown cold to private duties that people can't see. Now they grow cold to public duty as hearing sermons, reading the Bible, godly conference, fellowship, and the like. So you leave off secret prayer, pretty soon you're leaving off public prayer. You leave off secret mortification, pretty soon you're leaving off public worship. Then they begin to pick holes, as we say, in the coats of some of the godly, like what I was just talking about. And that devilishly, that they may have a seeming color to throw religion behind their backs. They start to say, well, that guy, everybody thinks that he's a genuine believer. He's a real mature Christian, but even he does this and that. And you start to poke holes in their coat. Even the best Christians are unholy in key ways. And so I should think very little about my unholiness. I'm just like everybody else. Six, then they begin to adhere to and associate themselves with carnal, loose, and wanton men. They not just leave off their Christian friends and the warm, lively Christian friends. Now they go and they make friends with worldly men and sinful, openly sinful men. Well, these are my friends. You don't have to have all friends that are Christians. Come on now, maybe I'll evangelize them. Maybe they'll come to church. Seven, then they give way to carnal and wanton discourses in secret. And glad are they if they can see such things in any that are counted honest, that they may the more boldly do it through their example. So again, if other respected Christians do this too, well, then I can be emboldened to do these things myself. You know, why not a little drunkenness? Why not a little gambling? Why not a little wickedness? Number 8, after this, they begin to play with little sins openly. So that's the one bleeding into the other. You see that some people's language shifts. So they start using the nicer curse words, and then maybe the not so nicer ones, and then they're foul mouth before you know it. They cut some corners here for a good rationalized reason, and then they find it easier to cut some other corners, and they become dishonest. And we could give a lot of examples. Number 9, and then being hardened, they show themselves as they are. So that all happens, and over time, the heart is harder and harder and harder. And you can see it happen in certain people. You can watch it happen. And they're making the excuses. And you just hope that there's somebody in addition to you that will love them enough to call them on it and to say, brother, you are walking down a very, very fearful path here. Come on, stop it. You know, don't be so over scrupulous. Don't be so legalistic and prideful. You don't do these things? Come on, you're perfect? Brother, we're not talking about me. I'm not. Yes, do I have specks and logs in my eye? Yes, I do, and I would invite you to point them out to me in specifics, but here we're talking about you. If you don't deal with this, your soul is in trouble. Oh, you think that I'm not a real Christian? I'm not passing judgment on your soul. I'm telling you that you're walking the way that no Christian ought to walk, and that many professing Christians have walked and have found themselves not to be Christians. And if that counsel isn't taken, if they don't have somebody in their lives who's doing that for them, the heart just gets harder and harder, and then eventually is that announcement. You know, I've called myself a Christian for a long time, but I just don't believe it anymore. And there's all sorts of excuses, all the way that Christians speak now of LGBT people, or the way Christians speak about justice, and these things are, you know, the world does this better than them, and you want to exclude people, I don't want to exclude people. All sorts of excuses come as to why they are throwing off their professed faith in Christ and going back to the vomit that is their sin. And it even comes by dressing up the vomit, even by squeezing some Febreze on the vomit and saying, oh, it's not so bad. That's apostasy. Thus they are being launched again into the gulf of misery unless a miracle of grace prevent it. They everlastingly perish in their own deceivings. Is that you? Are you on that slide of drawing off thoughts of God, death, and judgment, casting off private duties by degrees, shunning the company of lively and warm Christians, growing cold to public duty, picking holes in the righteousness of some, associating with carnal and worldly people, giving way to carnal and worldly actions, playing with little sins openly? Are you on any part on that slide? If so, come and talk to somebody. Talk to a trusted Christian friend. Talk to a parent. Talk to a pastor. And just say, I don't know how I got here, but my heart isn't where it needs to be. And I want to nip this in the bud. I want to mortify this way in my life, lest I come to its end. Help me. There's no shame in that. That's honorable. That's noble that you would see the treasure you're in danger of leaving off and say, help me lay hold of it. Help me make sure that I'm his. If you're someone who knows someone who's in that situation, speak up. Love their souls as to make them sensible of their sins. Endure whatever mocking and jeering and making fun, ostracism that you have to endure for the sake of love to your brother. And remember that we are our brother's keepers. That we are put in each other's lives as the church to watch not only for ourselves, first to ourselves, but also to those whom God has given us to be family. The danger of apostasy, I mean, the next sentence is they go from the enchanted ground into the land of Beulah, which is sort of the land just before the celestial city. So you can be at the gates of heaven and fall away. You can look like a mature Christian. You can be a pastor. We've seen pastors apostatize in recent months in evangelicalism at large. People who have written books and were speakers at conferences say, I don't believe in Jesus. And of course, we know 1 John 2:19 that means they were never truly believers to begin with, because true faith perseveres to the end. We cannot let off the gas pedal in our Christian life not until we go to heaven. You know, people say you can sleep when you're dead. That's true in a Christian spiritual sense. You can rest from your labors at mortifying sin when you've got no more sin to mortify. When you've crossed those gates into the celestial city, there to see Christ as he is and to be like him forevermore. But until then, the utmost vigilance and watchfulness is demanded right up until the very end. You might think, well, because I'm so mature, such because I've been a Christian for so long, I can sort of let my foot off the pedal and coast a little bit. I can ride this one out to heaven. No, you can't, because there are men who turn back right at the end. And Bunyan means to warn us of this by giving us this glimpse of apostasy right up against the gates of heaven. So be warned. Examine yourselves. Love the brother or sister you see walking in this dangerous way and speak to them. Sharpen one another so that none of us might miss this glorious inheritance that we've come within striking distance of.